GAA on Off the Ball.
You're very welcome along to OTB's Hurling Review of the Decade 2010 to 2019. A decade which began with the Liam Sheedy managed Tipperary team beating Kilkenny in an All-Ireland final and finishing with the same thing happening again. In between, we had breakthrough successes for Galway and for Limerick, also Clare winning a title in 2013 after a pretty epic replay against Cork. Unfortunately for Waterford, their wait for an All-Ireland title went on. Plenty of heartbreak for them throughout the decade, including their defeat to Galway in 2017. Meanwhile, the club kingpins over the decade have been Ballyhale Shamrocks, and they have a chance to win a fourth Tommy Moore of the 10-year decade when they play in the final next month. We're looking back on the decade here with a very esteemed guest panel with us as well, Nicky English, a former winner as both a player and a manager with Tipperary of the All-Ireland, also a six-time All-Star as well. And we're joined as well by nine-time All-Star and nine-time All-Ireland winner Tommy Walsh and Dahi Boland from offtheball.com as well. Gentlemen, good morning to you.
Sadly, no All-Irelands to compete with the lads there, but sure luck. What
yeah,
can you do?
Look,
can you do?
Between us, there's 15 All-Stars in this room and Tommy on Skype as well. Unfortunately, they're all owned
not
by two
bad
of them.
Going, not bad going.
Tommy Walsh is joining us from Kilkenny on Skype as well. Tommy, how are things?
Yeah, good, Will.
We're going to have a look back, I think, at I think what a lot of people, Tommy, feel is one of the best decades of hurling we've ever had, just in terms of the sheer quality of games. And when we pick our five or six best games of the decade, it was actually really difficult to narrow it down because not only have we had good games, but we've had some great games in the big stage as well, in terms of semi-finals and finals.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can all remember the 90s when we had the revolution years. We had Clare, we had Kilkenny, we had Offaly. With so many counties winning, that wasn't just the traditional three, the big three, Kilkenny, Cork and Tipperary. So I think from 2010 to 2019 was much the same. Captured the imagination of the public, captured, I suppose, the hearts and the souls of the nation, really, with Wexford coming back to the top, winning the first Leinster final in 15 years this year. With Limerick coming back in 2018 and going on to do the Grand Slam, they won the All-Ireland, they won the league the following year, and they won the Munster. They held all three. I know they weren't in the same year, but at the one time. And then you had, obviously, Clare and Kilkenny and Tipperary as well. So it was just a brilliant time for so many different counties. And I think that's really what captured the imagination of so many people.
Nicky, we're going to kick things off by looking at our games of the decade. And one place to start would be 2010. It was Kilkenny and Tommy playing on the day, looking to try and win five in a row. But ultimately, they got turned over by Tipperary and Lark Corbett scoring a hat-trick of goals at Croke Park.
Yeah, it feels such a long time ago now. You know, just it feels like even in a different era, Kilkenny going for five in a row and like Liam Sheedy coming back again this year, I suppose. But yeah, it was a fantastic game from what I remember. There was a bit of, I suppose, tension from a Kilkenny perspective going into it. Maybe the five in a row, you know, ultimately probably weighed heavily on them, maybe going in. Maybe Tommy would know about better. But, you know, ultimately Kilkenny played John Tennyson and Henry Shefflin at centre-back and centre-forward, both of them having had recent cruciate injuries before. And the remarkable thing was that John Tennyson actually went to 70 minutes. It would be hard to imagine that you could do that. I suppose he threw the hurley. He threw the hurley at Larry finishing up for one of the goals. Larry was fantastic on the day, and I think Tipperary just. I think there was moments in the game that I can remember Henry Shefflin having to go off. Obviously, the conditions I don't think were ever going to be conducive to him. And then, as he went off, there was a very awkward free to be taken, and it was Richie Powers' first action of the day. And there was a hard way to start with the whole, I suppose, momentum against you with Henry Shefflin going off the field. And I could be wrong, though, but I think that free went wide. And, if Tipperary, I suppose, ran out easy enough winners in the end of that game. But like, I suppose, much like Kerry in the 80s, Kilkenny came back and after losing the five in a row, won four All-Irelands afterwards. And, you know, if they'd won the five in a row, would they have won those four All-Irelands? Who knows? But, I mean, for the next couple of years after that, the Kilkenny-Tipperary rivalry went up another level and some unbelievable matches and unbelievable occasions. But Kilkenny having the best of it, really, they might have lost that day, but, you know, they were superb for the next 3 or 4 years after that.
Fair to say, really, the rivalry of the decade was Tip and Kilkenny. They finish here with, you know, seven All-Irelands between them across the 10 years, and the amount of, I guess, massive games between them, league finals, All-Ireland semi-finals and finals, even that qualifier in Nolan Park, they've all been kind of epic battles throughout the period, but
yeah,
the great rivalry, isn't it?
No, unbelievable rivalry, and you know, it never, there was never, you know, sometimes rivalries can tip over into animosity, etc. But this one never did really, and it wasn't just that they were closely matched, but the quality of the hurling that both sides played in some of those games, you know, there was epic matches.
Tommy, I know you've always said it's a respectful rivalry between the neighbours, both in Tipperary and Kilkenny, but your memories of kind of the build-up to 2010, obviously a lot of the talk was there about five in a row. Did that put any kind of weight of expectation onto you guys going into that game?
Yeah, there was huge crowds. I think there was 10,000 at training one night. Coming up to that, that was 1,010 All-Ireland. Henry Shefflin, there was, you know, a lot of media attention around himself and John Tenson, and how they're after tearing their cruise sheets. And miraculously then they were going down to Ger Hartman down in Limerick to see could they still play in the final. And amazingly they did. And as Nicky alluded there, John Tennyson lasted the full 70 minutes. So like the courage and bravery of two lads to do something like that, especially going out on the biggest day of all, going for the five in a row, which no team had done before. So it was really a remarkable build-up, really. I don't think the pressure got to us. 2004, when Kilkenny were going for the three in a row, I definitely thought that year we probably shied away from the whole talk of the three in a row. It was like, you know, let's not talk about this. Let's shelter ourselves from it. And I thought we learned massive lessons from that. I think 2010 All-Ireland just came down to really two things, I suppose. The first of all, the lessons Tipperary forwards learned when they went in on goal. In 2009 All-Ireland, they played just as well in 2009 All-Ireland, but they couldn't get the ball past PJ Ryan. And PJ Ryan held the hurl, say his right hand is a strong hand, so his right hand is on top. So the boss will always be over to the right hand of the goal. And they hit every ball. Owen Kelly had a chance, Callanan had a chance, Lark Corbett had a chance, and they all went to that side, and PJ Ryan just saved him. He was having the game of his life, ended up getting man of the match. You fast forward 12 months then, Will, 2010 All-Ireland. Every ball they got from Lars' first goal went to the left side of PJ, to the left-hand side of the goal. And it's much more difficult for a goalie in that space to bring over the boss of the hurl to save it. So I definitely think all their goals, they definitely studied 2009 All-Ireland and put the boss to the other side. That was one thing. And I think the second thing was the hunger. To win a final against a team in such form and with a team with such skill as that Tipperary team, you need to be just, you know, there needs to be fire in your belly from the very first ball that's thrown in. And I think we didn't probably get that till probably halfway through the game. We were just kind of playing as if it was an ordinary game. To win a final against Tipperary in that kind of form, you had to be at the full of your health and you had to be going for every ball as if it was your last. And I don't think really we were at that level for the 70 minutes.
If you think, Will, that game, Tipperary, they started so well. Like, I think they were 1-4 up to a point like in the early stages. And throughout that first half, as Tommy mentioned, I think Tip were 6 points up for a good part of the game. But then Richie Power, you know, got a goal, got Kilkenny back into the game. And you're going into half time saying, Tip have probably done all the hurling here. But yet Kilkenny, as Kilkenny do, they're still in the game. And then second half, you're sort of nail-biting stuff. But then, as Nicky was saying earlier on, Lair Corbett came to the fray and did what Lair does best. And I remember the day as well. The conditions, they weren't great. You know, it was, I think, very wet conditions, Tommy, if you remember. So, like, it wasn't the best day to be playing hurling.
Yeah, Doughty. And it was probably one thing that I noticed about from 2010 to 2019 was there were so many changes in tactics. So many teams brought different game plans that we probably hadn't seen before. And 2010/2009, with Eamon O'Shea coming in with the coaching of the forward line and movement, that Kilkenny team was, after winning so many All-Irelands, based on a zonal defence where everyone stood to their own position. You looked after each other. And 2010 then, much the same as 2009, Lara Corbin, these guys, they're running out as far as midfield, but then they'd come sprinting back in and maybe wouldn't be picked up in time. They get the pass, next minute the score is on. And that was a big change for that Kilkenny team to meet, really, was a forward line that you really couldn't catch because the zonal defence had worked so well for so many years. So Brian Cody and his management team then had to go off and change their tactics. And if you fast forward to 2011 All-Ireland then, you know, we went very much kind of man on man. Everyone got a player to mark and you followed them, which went against the grain because rewind to 2004. I think it was a Leinster semi-final. We played Wexford and we tried to go man-on-man following guys, and Damien Fitzhenry was hitting his puck outs. One wing forward would sprint over to the other side, and same with the other wing forward. Both wing backs would follow him, but the ball was favouring the forward, and Wexford tore Kilkenny to shreds that day. And so that's what probably started the zonal defence, if you like. But then fast forward in a couple of years, and we were beaten then playing a zonal defence, so we had to revert back the following guy. So there was definitely massive changes in tactics over the years, and it wasn't a case of one tactic fitted all.
Tommy, it's one of kind of the great what ifs, really. Like, if you'd won that day in 2010, given you won the next two, it could have been seven in a row. But you mentioned in terms of the hunger the Tipperary showed. Do you reckon if he had won in 2010, Kilkenny could have run off seven in a row then?
Sure, who knows, Will, really. I think 2011, we were probably at our most hungriest, probably 0-11 and 0-6. And that came from the defeat. So maybe if we had to win the five in a row, you wouldn't know what would have happened. You know, it might soften you up and you might never win another All-Ireland again. You don't know.
Well, look, we're going to be back to Tipperary and Kilkenny in a moment when we talk about 2014. But when we think of 2013, lads, a remarkable first game. It was difficult to separate the final and the replay because both were great. At the end of the first game, Doughty, it looked like Patrick Horgan had won it. Then Brian Gavin plays a few seconds overtime at the end. Clare get themselves an equaliser. It goes to a replay. And then we get the introduction of Shane O'Donnell and a 20-minute hat-trick in the replay as well. And just remarkable free scoring throughout that final in 2013, the replay.
Two crazy games altogether. Like, looking back at the drawn game, like as you said, Patrick Horgan getting the point, Cork taking the lead for the very first time in that game. And then Clare get that equalising point. You'd expect Tony Kelly, Podge Collins or someone to get the point. Cornerback Donal O'Donovan coming up with an outrageous point. And then, as you said, the replay just took on a life of its own. Like, it was just crazy altogether. Like, where'd you even start?
I was talking to Davy Fitz about this before, about Shane O'Donnell, and the whole week he basically put a fake team out, and he told a fake team to the actual panel on the Wednesday night when it was named as well. He only told Shane O'Donnell when they were getting off the train from Clare that he was going to be playing, because the concern was with a teenager, it might actually hype him out. I think, Nicky, that's good management, isn't it?
Well, it is when he scores three goals, you know. So, you know, when it works, everything is good management. Will, you know, if it doesn't work, then you probably wouldn't hear about it in the first place anyway. But Shane O'Donnell was capable of doing that, though. You know, he's again a very direct player and can finish well. And he was really the star of that game. But for me, that game was remarkable actually, because of Anthony Nash taking the penalties the way he was taking them. And Davey had all the Clare team with goalies, hurlies, and I can still remember the excitement of Anthony Nash coming up and where is he going to hit it from? Is he going to strike it? Like, would you like to be standing in the goals? And I know that the rules basically have changed since, and probably rightly so, because it was dangerous, but it was unbelievable entertainment on that throne and replay to see Nash hitting those from virtually at the edge of the square and 15 people flying into the net past.
What I thought was remarkable was people were charging down the free at the time, despite the fact that Nash was throwing it maybe 4 or 5 yards forward.
Yeah, it was great. It's such a difference. You know, you had the Saturday evening replay, you had the floodlights. It was a difference between, you know, you had Tipperary and Kilkenny. You know, you could say you had too much of them really for a few years there, and you had these young players from Clare and young players from Cork that you'd say, after those two games, they're going to dominate from there. Clare won the under-21 the week after in some style as well, and you'd say Clare were going to dominate that decade. But sure, they never won a match in Croke Park, I don't think, afterwards. And it's just like the Tipperary. Actually, I think I was thinking about it afterwards. Tipperary won the under-21 in 2010 as well. It's not a great
barometer of future success
winning the under-21 and the senior in the same year. For whatever reason, I don't know, it should. And you see Tipperary have won the same this year, and you said, well, they have more players coming, and it should be important, a fantastic future for, but it hasn't been in the past.
Tommy, like when Nash was lining up those frees and penalties, it obviously led to a rule change in the end because it was seen as dangerous, but you'd want to be slightly crazy to chase one down, wouldn't you? But Clare did it continually over the two games.
Yeah, well, that's what you do on the day. You don't really think about, you probably think about saving that ball and walking off as the hero and getting claps on the back. And Nicky, a man that you would have probably hurled with, but you definitely managed, is Declan Ryan. I remember Declan doing that. He was one of the first guys to start it. I remember playing him in a challenge match against Clonalty Rossmore, and one or two of our lads tried to do the same thing. But I think it's just a natural reaction because you don't want to let that ball into the net. I think what happened, what led to the rule change was Nash's strikes were so powerful that they were just absolute rockets. You go back to, I suppose, 20 years ago, the balls didn't travel so fast. Now that, you know, once you hit it, they're going 100 mile an hour. So I think it was definitely important that someone could get a belt in the wrong place, and sure, no one would want that. But the excitement was epic. And if, bar the safety of the players, it would have been great to still see it today, because just the build-up to that free, you know, you have 30 seconds as he's coming up from the goal. And I remember one of the teams that year, they started hitting them jostles coming up, and that led to the crowd on their feet and roaring either for their player or against their player. Nash comes up then, and when that ball hit the net, there was no better feeling, I suppose, especially for the Cork crowd. So I think that was definitely one of the highlights of the decade.
Nicky, as it worked out, that's as close as Cork got to lifting the Liam McCarthy, where they were ahead in the business end of the final in 2013 in the drawn game. After that, obviously, they subsequently weren't able to win a championship. First time they've gone a decade without lifting the Liam McCarthy.
Yeah, which is, you know, from I grew up in the 70s and 80s, really, and to think that Cork wouldn't be winning an Ireland in a decade really is hard to imagine. And when we were coming up as underage players, Cork were dominant in underage, in minor and under 21, and for whatever reason they haven't been victorious at minor under 21 level, and have struggled. They, even though they've got the last couple of All-Ireland finals under 20 and 21, they haven't been able to win. And so it's like they've gone through management changes, and as you say, like Jimmy Barry Murphy got as close to anyone in that 2013. And maybe if the ref blew the whistle, you know, it came down ultimately to a sideline ball. And I think it was Moylan that, you know, had it up down in the corner, and was it the right thing to put it up into Hill 16 and waste those couple of minutes, or let it go dead? And it went dead, and maybe Cork might have expected the whistle to go at that stage, but, you know, it didn't. And O'Donovan got the great point for Clare. But, yeah, no, it's, you know, Cork have, they've flattered to deceive, really, at times. You know, I suppose their best chance after that was a couple of years ago against Limerick, when, you know, they really were close enough to being there, but, you know, probably ran out of players, and maybe just their bench and their squad hasn't been deep enough since 2013, really, you know.
Well, Tommy, we started with painful memories for Kilkenny supporters in terms of 2010. We'll move on to 2014, the drawn game, which I think a lot of people feel not just game of the decade, but maybe one of the best ever games of hurling ever played. Like, looking at some of the stats in terms of the scoring, it finished up 322 to 128. In the game, there was 54 scores across the 72 minutes, 9 wides across that time, and it was the highest scoring final since 1970, which people don't remember was played over 80 minutes back in the 70s as well. Like, quite a remarkable final.
Yeah, well, and it was probably one that we would have been probably disappointed with, because Kilkenny would have prided themselves on physicality, on defence. That number 15, it wasn't just his job to score, it was his job to stop his man clearing the ball, giving good balls into the forwards. And definitely, like, most of the Tipperary forwards did quite well that way, that day, but probably wasn't the fault of the backline, because the ball coming into him was majestic. And we probably, that day again, we probably were going back to the tactic where we followed around the players in 2011 and won. And suddenly this wasn't good enough anymore. So we were following players, which was creating a huge amount of space. And Tipperary then, the likes of Lahr, the likes of Callanan, they were making great scores from play. And that led to a high-scoring game. And the one thing you don't want against that Tipperary team is bring it into a shootout. You wanted to bring it into a kind of a dogfight where it's all about defence. And that 2014 first day, we were definitely very disappointed with it. At the end of the day, it came down to Hawkeye. If there was no Hawkeye, possibly Tipperary were All-Ireland champions, because more often than not, an umpire, if it's kind of halfway there or not, he'll put the hand and give the score. And that day, we were lucky enough, Hawkeye was there and waved it wide. And the history then, the second day then, it was all changed around, because Kilkenny went back to basics, back to kind of zonal type defence, bringing it where there was nobody defending on their own. It wasn't you following your man. It was you following, well, marking your man, but also helping out the lad beside you, the lad behind you. so that you're defending twos and threes as opposed to on your own and best man wins. So I think that 2014, while it was a classic regards shoot, as a shootout, but we wouldn't have been happy with the other sides of hurling, which is a massive important, like catching the ball in the air, shielding your man out to the wing, who can block and helping out your teammates, teamwork, what we all speak about. They're massive parts of hurling, a massive part of the GAA, and which probably Kilkenny weren't happy with in that first day.
Well, Nicky, 124 the 128 was scored from play by Tipperary that day. It was remarkable from their forwards, the space they created and the score taking as well.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, that they really had a great chance to, you know, Tip, you know, could have won that game. Like, I know it came down to Hawkeye in the finish, but that as Tommy said, they were the conditions that suited Tipperary, and they got the game that they wanted. And you know, I suppose Kilkenny did well to hang in the end in that game. And it was a question in lots of those games then, it's a question who can learn more for the replay. And it was obvious that Kilkenny had a lot to learn. You know, they had to really go, as Tommy said, they were going to go back to basics. And they did that. But like Tipperary's just their class in the forwards of Jamie Callanan, Noel McGrath, you know, Bubbles, you know, like they are fantastic players, you know. And when they're able to get at and particularly on that, when the supply is coming right, as it was, and the whole machine is moving well then, as it was that day, like scoring is really going to come very easily to them. And 124, 128 is readily achievable.
Do you remember at the start of the game, like obviously at the end of that game, we remember Hawkeye played a huge part, but at the start of that game, Colin Fenley got the opening point of the game, but we had to have Hawkeye for that point.
That's right.
You know, like, but I remember the first Tip's first point as well that day, Bubbles, Darren Gleeson, lovely puck out to Shane McGrath around the 65. Shane McGrath turns, hits a long ball up to Bubbles. Bubbles tries to control it with the hurl, doesn't come off first time. He's then trying to pick the ball off the ground. Takes him a while to get it off, but shrugs his player away off the left hand side, 45 yards out. Lovely score, but the game just took off after that. Like, I just remember the second half performance of Larry Corbett. Like, he sort of grew into that game. But another man also from Kilkenny, Owen Larkin, in that first half, like watching the game back there the other day, I couldn't believe how good he actually was. Like, looking back, I forgot how important he was to Kilkenny in that game at the start. He was winning so much ball, causing so much trouble for Tip that day. Direct running, you know, but
he creates space whenever he gets down and runs.
Absolutely. And then you had Richie Power as well, causing Tipperary problems. But overall, that game, unbelievable game.
Tommy, remarkable atmosphere at that game as well, because like Dahlia, rewatched it on Monday, half for pleasure, half for research, really. And like when Bubbles puts over a point late on, the Tipperary fans go crazy. Kilkenny get back level again. They're on the kind of ascendancy for a couple of moments. Then there's the free, and there's like you couldn't write the drama there was in the last couple of minutes. And then obviously the mixed emotions for both supporters. And I think they were just happy to balk it a second day at the end. Just an unbelievable atmosphere during that drawn game.
There was, and it's because of the shootout. Like, you go back to the players like Sakalinen, like Galan. Anytime these guys get the ball, there's a buzz of expectation because you just don't know what's going to happen. So you go back to the 2014 final. There were so many forwards of such calibre. You had Richie Power, you had Owen Larkin, you had Henry coming on. On the other side, you had Callanan, Larry Corbett, Noel McGrath, Bubbles. Like, just all brilliant forwards. If there was one of them playing, there'd be a buzz and there'd be an expectation when the ball came around them. So to have so many of them on the one field in such an open game probably led to such a great atmosphere. Going in at half-time, I think Kilkenny would have been very much worried. I remember half-time that day, we were definitely worried because it just felt like probably 2010 all over again, where it was just a free-scoring game where there was little or no control. When you lead it into a game like that, like, you're just hoping for the best. And we were just so lucky. Richie Power, you mentioned him there, Dahi. Like, Richie Power was doing little or no training that time. You know, his brother John Power was playing that day. He was kind of picked for the final out of the blue, had a brilliant final. But Richie Power, on little or no training, what he'd done that year was just majestic. And the same with probably the last couple of years. He did it with the club a year or two later as well. Little or no training, turning up on the day then and just doing what he does. And the goals and that he scored. I suppose, when we all talk now about preparation, like, it's still about using your head. It's still about the skills you learn from 8, 9, 10 years of age. Like I see the reports coming out this week on the amount of training intercounty players are doing now. And I think it was Dr. Niall Minor might have said there that 40% less training won't do you any harm. And he's right. Like, if you manage it right and if you think about what you have to do, Richie Power, years and years he spent hitting the ball off the wall. During the winter, I was listening to the great Kobe Bryant, the basketball player for the Lakers, won 5 championships. And he determined really that if he did kind of say, we'll say an hour or 2 hours extra training every day or every second day, that would, over a 5 or 10 year period, he would be 3 and 4 years ahead of the rest of the guys. So you go back to Richie Power, although he was doing little or no training coming up to them finals, what he was doing when he was 9, 10, 11 years of age, out with his father, out with his brother John, out with his brother Jamie, out with his friends, hitting the ball off a wall, catching balls, practicing every skill of the game, that's what led to probably 10 or 15 years later to Kenny winning All-Ireland. So I think it is very important to know as well, especially with the way it's going regards professionalism, as regards their attitudes and the time that players are putting into it, that it still goes back to the skills of the game. That if you spend them hours and hours and hours down in your local pitch, down in the county pitch, out with your brothers and sisters playing little games, practicing catching the ball, practice putting the ball in the back of the net, situations like that, that's what will really come to help you in All-Ireland finals and that in later years, in Munster finals and Leinster finals. We could go back to Tiger Woods when he was a young chap. His father, Earl, I think he was shaking tin cans as he was putting the ball into the hole. What was he doing? Preparing him for the big crowds later on when he'd have to do it in the majors. So I think, just going back to that point, that the All-Ireland final, Richie Power was an example to every young chap on the benefits of getting out against that wall.
Well, Nicky, we're going to skip forward 3 years for the next big game, because you know Galway had come up short in a few of the big occasions, and there was always that kind of maybe question about their mettle in the big games. They took on Tipperary, who were the reigning champions in 2017 in a semi-final. Turned out to be a bit of a shootout in the end. Joe Canning finished up with 11 points. But I think that game is probably best remembered for the one he pops over from the sideline about 60 yards out over his shoulder to win the game.
Yeah, that was you know, in the moments of the decade, that was a remarkable score, really. Because, you know, it wasn't that he was unmarked. You know, he ball came back out to him, but there was two or three tip fillers really closing him down very quickly. And, you know, Joe Canning is a fantastic striker of ball, and that was an amazing score. But, you know, I suppose, you see, Tommy mentioned it earlier on, it was interesting the way, you know, tactically, the way hurling evolved over the decade. So you'd starting off with Tipperary trying to create space and Kilkenny trying to close it down. But for a period then, you know, Kilkenny and Tipperary were very, very good in the air. And you heard Tommy there saying that, you know, catching the ball out of the air was important. It was important in those Tip Kilkenny games. But then Galway came with a huge team there for a few years. And then you had Tipperary and Galway really taking one another on airily in those, you know, in the 3 years there now, there was only a point between them in the All-Ireland semi-finals. Galway won 2 of them and Tip won 1 and went on to win the game. But, you know, those games were kind of, there were battles of giants, really. And in 1 year, you had Pádraic Maher knocking Joe Canning out over the sideline with a huge shoulder. And then the year after, when Galway had the momentum, you had Pádraic Maher coming up the field and I think it was Garrod McInerney. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and they were all pivotal moments in those games. But really, it was about long delivery of ball and people fielding the ball and making room to hit it with more power than anything else. And then, you know, you had in the middle of that, you had our 2013 Cork and Clare playing a shorter kind of game. You said it was going to go that way, but then it went back to that feeling in the air between Tipperary and Galway for a couple of years, and then you had the emergence of Limerick after that. But Galway had fantastic players, and actually I thought maybe that they could go and win another one, and they got pretty close to it. Now they have dropped back this year, new management coming in, but it was a huge, they were a very, very talented team who had, you know, got close on occasion, but that was a well-deserved All-Ireland for them, but a kind of a different type of a style, really. And then you had Limerick coming back in then after that with really short hurling and winning the All-Ireland. You say that's, you know, that's the way to go now. But ultimately it was Tipperary's power, I suppose, in the air again of the Mahers this year, when Wexford and Kilkenny for whatever reason, chose to go long down into their down their throats for a finish. Maybe Kilkenny were forced to with descending off. But, you know, it's so going back to Tommy's earlier point about tactically, like the game is always evolving and changing. And on any given day, you have to be adaptable. You can't say, OK, we're going to play a sweeper today and that's going to be it. You have to be, the best teams can adapt, really. And the best of them can actually adapt on the day.
Truth be told, I, this was difficult to call in terms of which Tipperary Galway game in that series we were actually going to pick. I guess maybe the importance of this one and Galway's journey to ending the 29-year famine and winning the title is why we've picked this one, and probably the iconic nature of the final score as well. But there was three or four brilliant games between these sides.
Oh, absolutely. Like if you go back to 2010, I think it was what, 3-17 to 3-16, unbelievable game. I remember Ollie Canning was on fire that day for Galway. He was doing a superb job back there at cornerback. But pretty much the man we've been talking about most of the show so far, Lar Corbett, turned up that day again with a late point. But I remember the 2014 game down in Thurles as well. You know, I was at that game and Galway started so well that day. I think Johnny Glynn was giving the Tip fullback line plenty of problems that day. But Tip were struggling, but eventually gradually got into the game. I think they were 12 points down as well at one stage in that game. Shamey scored 3-8 that day. But Tip went on to win that. And that was a big momentum game for Tip to win. And likewise, 2010. You talk about Tip-Kilkenny rivalry. That Tipperary-Galway rivalry this decade has been very much up there.
Tommy, when it comes to Joe Canning, we're just looking at a picture there of him admiring his own handiwork after he puts the ball over the bar. He went on to be Hurler of the Year at the end of that year. And really, that was kind of the big game moment, the clutch moment from a player that you need to win a championship.
It was, and even if you're rewinding back to 2015, which was probably my favourite game of the trilogy, we'll say. In fairness to Tip and Limerick, going back to even Nicky's time in 91, 93, there were just massive All-Ireland semi-finals and people loved watching them. They, just like Kilkenny and Tipperary, Kilkenny and Cork, Tipperary and Galway bring out the best of each other. And as Doughty just said, Shamey Callan scored 3-9, 3-4 from play and still ended up in the losing side. I think it was the same day Noel McGrath could have came back from he was after being out for 4 months with testicular cancer. And that was an emotional day because I think the whole Croke Park stood up that day and just applauded him. A very emotional day. And, you know, such one of the greats and a great club man with Loughmore as well as his whole family. So 2015 was brilliant. But you asked me about Joe Canning. It still came back to a one-point game. A sub came on, Shane Maloney, and it was Canning giving that beautiful pass. As you said, Will, clutch moment when you want your big players to step up. And he gave a beautiful diagonal ball down into the Hill 16 and Maloney put the ball over the bar. Very little a defender could do. Fast forward on then to 2000, like they didn't ultimately win the All-Ireland that year. So still hard to look back probably as a Galway man, as a Joe Canning fan, with fond memories probably of that day. So you had to look at 17 when they actually were able to go on and win the All-Ireland. For him to score that point, sure, again, like he'd done it so often with Port Tumna. Like he's three or four club All-Irelands, probably five or six county final medals with that great team, and could never just get over the line with Galway. Was there in 0-12, was there in 0-15, and just couldn't do it. And finally, I suppose in 17, he was the man in the semi-final.
Nicky, our fifth favourite game of the decade that we've picked out was the 2018 semi-final between Limerick and Cork, which went extra time. And I guess Cork supporters will rue the fact they were 6 points up with 7 minutes to go. Limerick then scored seven scores in a row to go in front with Aaron Gillan in tremendous form at the end of that game. Then who else but Horgan to equalise the game late on, and then they went extra time. Limerick, I think, had a little bit too much off the bench in the end in terms of winning the game. But we probably all remember, and I'm sure it's one of our most exciting moments as well, was Quaid making that save, which proved so crucial to Limerick's year and eventually landing their first Liam McCarthy in 45 years.
They started well in the championship, beating Tipperary, and then, you know, ultimately come a bit unstuck. But, I mean, it was all probably, you know, took off from them when they beat Kilkenny in the quarter-final. And then that set up the match with Cork. And that was just, it was an incredible match, really. I suppose Shamey Harnady coming out, he was injured, you know, and ultimately, like, it's Murphy's Law, like, the chance to win the match ultimately fell to Shamey Harnady, who he'd say, well, on a normal day, would he have had the leg to score? He had a dead leg. Maybe he was a fraction off. But either way, Nicky Quaid came out and made an unbelievable save at that end. And, you know, Limerick were able to just get to extra time And obviously they had more on the bench. You know, you had Dowling coming on, who was putting in a huge shift from the bench in all those matches that year. But it was just the excitement of it, because you know, the day before had gone to extra time, and you'd say, you know, gee, if you got any kind of a match, you know, on the Sunday, you know, this has to be worse than what we had seen on the Saturday. It couldn't match up to that, but it was, sure, it was better again, and it was just, you know, a kind of a continuation of the excellence of hurling and the way it's been played and the excitement of it, and not just for you know, people who are steeped in hurling all their lives, but you know, a growing audience of people that are watching hurling the way it's played like that, and going right down to the wire, where you've no idea with 5 minutes to go or 6 minutes to go, you know, in that particular season, I think 9 point lead was actually the killer, really. If you got 9 points in front, you were virtually guaranteed to lose. And that's what happened to Cork. That's what happened in the semi-final the day before. And Limerick ultimately, you know, got to the final and were able to win the McCarthy Cup. And, you know, this would have been a disappointment for them this year, but like they are a team with a lot of talent.
Dolly, that weekend, it was hurling nirvana, wasn't it?
Oh, it was unbelievable, like, hurling weekend. I just remember that day, like, what, 70,000 at the game? Unbelievable crowd. The colour was unbelievable. But I was at the two games. I was at the Galway and Clare, and you're coming out from Croke Park after the Galway and Clare game, and you're saying, what a game. And you're saying to yourself, there's no way we're going to have the same, like, on the Sunday. And I was out that night on the Saturday night, and I remember going to Croke Park, feeling a bit groggy now, but I was fairly woken up, like, during that whole game. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, I remember 48 minutes into the game, Cork had 22 points on the board. Like, 22 points after 48 minutes is unbelievable, like. And then you think of the last 10 minutes. I think Cork were up, what, 6 points to go? Or 6 points up with 10 to go? And Clare come back. They got a few frees, obviously, but look, they had the willingness to come back and drive on. And as Nicky said, the bench made such an impact that day. Pat Ryan came off the bench. Like, you know, Limerick, you could just feel the crowd are really behind Limerick, you know, as they were from the start. But for that final 10 minutes, just the level of the atmosphere just went up a further notch after that, like.
Tommy, Limerick went on to win the league after that. They'd won Munster in this kind of period of winning as well. Obviously, they came up a little bit short this year, losing the semi-final to your own side, Kilkenny, ultimately this summer. But their consistency over the last couple of years has been incredible. And what a summer that was for Limerick.
What a summer it was, and what a weekend. That was definitely, like, it was one of the most sensational summers in hurling. And when you talk about such a great decade, I think 2018 was such a great year. Just kind of titanic battles after epic battles, Munster, Leinster, you name it, they were all just outstanding. And that weekend, the worry probably coming up to that weekend was it a PR disaster, really, for hurling, that we were cramming two All-Ireland semi-finals, two of the biggest games of the year, into the one weekend, and would it be all over in a shot? But I think it's after starting really something glorious, because now it's the weekend, I suppose, that we all look forward to most throughout the hurling year, because this year the two semi-finals were sensational as well. But that Galway Clare game on the Saturday, I thought you was talking about, I think I was on with yourselves the following day, and it was just reference, we were training the previous night, and we got a text to say that it was going to be delayed for an hour, come down after the game, because the Galway Clare one, I think, went to extra time. And like, it just captured the imagination of the public. Could the following day, the Sunday, be any better? And it was. It was better than the Saturday. As you said, Will, there were 6 points down with 63 minutes on the clock. And suddenly they came back and win it with points. I know that they drew it first. And we talked about Nicky Quaid's save. Nicky, you remember Tommy Quaid, like, you know, a hero to the Limerick people. And played in the 80 All-Ireland against Galway, and just kind of really... He went into the hearts of the Limerick people, really, and for his son Nicky to do that then in an All-Ireland semi-final all those years later, I think that really tugged at the heartstrings of the Limerick people and probably the GAA people. So that was brilliant to see as well. Then Patrick Horgan, as you said, Will, scoring. Like, Patrick Horgan is definitely one of the players of the decade, you'd have to say, because even though he hasn't won an All-Ireland, he, more than anyone, has done everything he possibly could to bring that Lee McCarthy back to Cork. And for it was a tough enough free. It was out underneath the Cusack stand over on the sideline. I think Conor Lehan was after winning the free. And, you know, Cork, could they get to the All-Ireland final? He puts it over and, you know, the show goes on for another 30 minutes. And you'll often hear, I suppose, newspaper interviews and radio interviews from GA players. It's all about the panel. It's all about the subs. And Limerick, they scored 2-6 from the bench that day. Shane Dowland was in blistering form, as well as Pat Ryan, as you said earlier, Doughty. So the panel got Limerick over the line that day. So, yeah, Limerick, they were sensational. What a sensational summer. And, you know, the song that came on at the very end after the All-Ireland final, I think everyone that was in Croke Park will remember that day as well. So, yeah, no, it was a magical summer for Limerick, and especially after the heartbreak of 94.
Dahi, before we move on to our team of the decade and our players of the decade, some of the moments that maybe stuck out, I know two you wanted to pick out were from this year. Wexford finally getting their breakthrough after 2004 being their last Leinster. They won one this year. And for me, one that definitely stands out as well from this summer was the preliminary quarter final, Laois getting the win against Dublin, having won the Joe McDonagh and really upsetting the odds.
Yeah, I suppose looking at Wexford, you know, we don't have a lot of teams competing at the top level in hurling, so you need every county. And I suppose looking back to probably 2009, 2012 period, you're looking at Wexford and you're saying to yourself, well, where are Wexford going? Where are they going? Are they going to be back to what they were in the 90s? And luckily enough, there the last few years they've gradually been building up. And this year, the Leinster final beating Kilkenny, like, they were unbelievable. That they've been fantastic all year. Even the All Ireland semi final against Tipperary, you know, they could have easily have won that game. But there's something special about Wexford, you know, and like obviously they bring plenty of colour to Croke Park. Like that day, the All Ireland semi final, being at that game, I remember walking to Croke Park and there was a bunch of Wexford young Wexford kids. They must have been around 8 or 10, and you just hear them. They were very excited for the game. They were naming, saying, oh, I can't wait to see Lee Chain, can't wait to see Conor McDonald, Rory O'Connor. They were naming all these players, you know, which is great to hear, like, that all these young Wexford lads have all these heroes to look up to, you know. And look, Wexford, like your own county, Offaly, hopefully we'll see them in a few years' time bounce back, because, like, that's the thing, we're hurling. We need as much teams as possible competing at the highest level.
Nicky, when it comes to Wexford, I'd imagine the success of this year and how close they pushed the eventual champions Tipperary in the semi-finals as well. They've got Davy now for at least a couple of more years. That's a great platform to build for them into 2020.
Yeah, they certainly improved in 2019. You know, even if you take, say, Kilkenny as their barometer over the last number of years, there was, you know, the previous year Kilkenny, you know, beat Wexford in all the games or most of the games they played, whereas this year Wexford had just the edge on Kilkenny. And if you have the edge on Kilkenny, you know, Kilkenny are a great barometer, because they're playing at least to 100% of their potential, and maybe a little bit with it. They're probably the only team that you can be guaranteed next year are going to do that. Mm-hmm. The rest of them can move up and down the levels, but Kilkenny are going to do that. And if you can be ahead of them, as Wexford proved this year, you know, and then Wexford got a bit more. I think they got a bit more confidence, really. You know, they have a certain style which is difficult to play against. It does take up a lot of energy though, really, and you saw if they're to continue with the style they played against Tipperary, that they actually have to, I suppose, find greater strength within on the bench, really, because, you know, when you have the likes of John O'Connor and Rory O'Connor and Dee O'Keefe and these guys having to be replaced, given the amount of legwork they have done over the 70 minutes, well, then you actually have to have similar standard player to replace them. And I think that's where ultimately Wexford came a little bit unstuck. You know, it looked to me like they were going to win the game against Tipperary. I think it looked to me like they had it won, actually. Tipperary found something remarkable in terms of spirit, but Wexford's style changed a bit, and it changed because the personnel they had was significantly changed. So I think Wexford, I think they're going to be right there, but I think they have to deepen their squad a little bit and maybe adapt a little bit their style to actually get over the big line.
Tommy, I just want to ask you about Laois, because it's in living memory. They conceded 10 goals and 20 points in a qualifier against Cork, and that was a horrible day for them. Cheddar Plunkett 5 years ago was on a committee to try and find a manager and couldn't find one, and ended up managing the team himself. Since then, you know, they've really brought up their standards, and we've talked a lot, obviously, about the elite teams, but I'd imagine for a lot of the teams in the Chasing Pack and those in the Joe McDonagh, Laois's success against Dublin this year, the fact they played in Croke Park twice and they hadn't been there since 2004, that kind of summer that Laois has had, I'm sure, is going to be a big inspiration for those developing counties who are trying to close the gap at the moment.
It is, Will, and you mentioned Cheddar Plunkett there. That man does remarkable work for the GAA, really, and what he done with Laois there a couple of years ago, the foundations that he built, the standards that he set for the players, the time and commitment that he, I suppose, gave himself, but also demanded of the players. And Cheddar is one, because I've, I suppose, heard and I've seen him. He's involved with James Stevens in Kilkenny at the moment. So you're hearing the stories of the standards he set and the work ethic that he has himself. And you'll often find that when your leaders are doing that, that the rest will follow. And it's no fluke that now Laois, then, under the guidance of Eddie Brennan, are doing quite well. And I think it's also very important to note, though, the importance of the Christy Rings and the Nicky Racker Cup, the Joe McDonagh Cup, the Christy Ring Cup, because Nicky mentioned earlier, confidence. Laois got their confidence from doing well in the Joe McDonagh Cup. This is my opinion. And doing quite well and winning it. And then they were able to go on that burst of energy and go on and beat Dublin the following week. Towards, if they're in, we'll say year in, year out, if they're in a division with the stronger counties, the Kilkennys, the Wexfords, the Tipperarys, you know, of this world, are they going to improve? Because are they going to take beatings upon beatings? And then slowly but surely, lads start going off travelling. You lose your confidence. What's the point in doing all this training? Towards this year, they had a realistic ambition of winning the Joe McDonagh Cup. Went on, won it, played brilliantly in the final. Then they could set their sights on the teams that were playing in the Lee McCarthy, which was the likes of Dublin. Went on, played really well against Dublin, had a home game and won it. Probably the best scenes in Laois for many, many a year. And then they went on and played really, really well against Tipperary in Croke Park. So I think the merits of the Joe McDonagh Cup and these competitions, like, and I only know myself because we played, I suppose, intermediate hurling after playing senior hurling for so long, getting beaten year after year after year. Did not want to go down, Will. And I think we were winning 1-2 games a year. Went down, we couldn't get back up for years. But we were still playing at a level that we could compete. There was always only a point or two in it. And I think that has to be looked at with the likes of these emerging counties. Like, Offaly are gone back now, back down the ladder. They're down in the Christy Ring Cup this year. But it should be, you know, that should be a realistic goal for them. Offaly players going back under Michael Fenley and these guys to go on and win that. And from there then, you build your confidence. Lads, suddenly you're winning matches. You enjoy going training again. You start putting in more of an effort. And it slowly and surely leads to success. So I think if the emerging counties could take Laois as an example, play in the competition and do well in it and try and win it, and hopefully, you know, that will lead to further success. Carlo were another example, I suppose, Will. The previous years, they did well and then went on and played in the Lee McCarthy Cup last year. So I think that Joe McDonagh Cup deserves huge praise.
Dahi, let's have a look at our team of the decade then. I think we were fairly unanimous on the goalkeeper.
We were. Owen Murphy, our goalkeeper. I think it was pretty much between him and Anthony Nash onto the fullback line. Paul Murphy as our corner, right cornerback, JJ Delaney fullback, and then Dahi Burke, our other cornerback. Our wing, our halfback line, we went with Brendan Maher, Brick Walsh, and Paddy Maher. Our midfield line, we've went with Michael Fenley and David Burke. And then our half forward line, we've gone with Noel McGrath, Joe Canning, and TJ Reid. And then our full forward line is Richie Hogan, Seamus Callanan, and Patrick Horgan.
Okay, quite a collection. Now, particularly that forward line was stacked, and we had to do a little bit of jiggling around to get players into positions as we kind of scrolled through the final few players on the team there. Seamus Callanan, the current Hurler of the Year, and our team will be completed by Patrick Horgan, who's been outstanding for Cork over the last decade. Nicky, we're looking at the full team up there at the moment. Do you have any arguments against the players that we've put in?
So we're after giving a long time talking about Larry Corbett today, guys, and I don't see him up there. Look, there are so many great players you have to, but Larry Corbett for me would definitely be in my team anyway.
And I think the only difficulty we had with Corbett, and indeed with Henry Shefflin, who had, you know, magnificent year within this decade as well, was just that we had to take over the kind of longevity of the whole 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to cross within, you know, even generations, which you are doing within a decade. I mean, Cian Lynch now is, you know, you take the Limerick fellas and the Waterford fellas who have come towards the end of the decade, and you know, so you where do you draw the line? So anyway, you did great. You did very well. It's a good team.
That's as close as we can get from Nicky. Tommy, go on, argue against us. Where do we get this team wrong?
No, listen, to pick any team is difficult. You'll probably, you know, a lot of it depends on then your own liking of a player and your own opinion and what you like. So listen, as you said, Lara Carver is left out there. Jackie Tyrrell is probably left out there. You know, I'll probably just end up naming all the Kilkenny lads. Listen, you picked a good team, so fair play.
Yeah, and there was a fair few other lads that we looked at. We were looking at Anthony Nash, we were looking at Kevin Moran, Tony Kelly, Pádraig Mannion, even Jamie Barron. We mentioned some of the Waterford lads, Brendan Bugler, who was fantastic in 2013, Cian Lynch, who won Hurler of the Year a couple of years ago as well. It's a very difficult task, but that was our 15 that we picked for our hurling team of the decade. We'll finish things out by picking our player of the decade, which is no easier to pick. Tommy, I'll give you the floor on this one first, because you've picked out a couple of backs and a couple of forwards you think are in contention.
Yeah, so I narrowed it down to four. What I tried to do was, there's only one nomination for each county, so as opposed to having a couple from the one county. So I brought it down to four. First one on the list, Patrick Horgan from Cork. I spoke about him earlier on, what he's done for the Glen below in Cork, winning championships and his scoring feats down in club hurling down there has been remarkable. Follow that on with what he's doing on a team that hasn't won an All-Ireland. It's just out of this world. I suppose his moment of the decade even was the goal he scored against Kilkenny this year, where he was on his knees. And the strike, the technique, how he was able to think, put it into the top left-hand corner. I thought it was just a magician at work. And I played shinty with Horgan back probably in the earlier part of the decade, and I ruined with him. And I just remember just watching him and just being amazed at his just talent and skill. And the stories were coming out. Then he lives below on the Glen. He's there in 2 or 3 hours every night. I was down doing something last year during the summer in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and who was out putting balls over the bar on just a random night? Horgan. Out there, and he was definitely there for an hour and a half or 2 hours. So I suppose I have massive respect, and I get massive enjoyment out of watching that man hurl. So he had to be one of my top four. The next guy then is one of my favourite hurlers. Again, probably Seamus Callan scored a 3-9 against Tipperary in that 2015 All-Ireland semi-final, led this man from going from number 7 back to number 3. And that was one of the best full-backs probably of the modern era, and that's Dahi Burke. He's also able to mix in a bit of football, winning a few club All-Irelands there, Cara Finn as well. So his talents seem to be limitless. But I love the way he just, when that ball comes in, everyone is out of the way. I'm winning this, and there's nothing else going to happen. Next on the list then is Pádraig Mar. Two best wing backs I've ever seen and undisputed would be Brian Whelan and JJ Delaney. Just guys that you'd pay your €20, just go watch them guys alone. What are they doing? How are they reading the game? I remember hearing a funny story about Whelan before at club level when he was centre back. He used to tell one of the Hanafis and the other wing back, could have been Gary Cahill or one of these guys, you do the slashing and I'll do the sweep. And so he had a great old head on him as well. And I was lucky enough to play a Railway Cup with him once or twice as well. And just a guy that you looked up to and had did it for so long for both club and county. Again, Brian Whelan was brilliant. But a lad just underneath that radar then, but will be talked about, is one of the best wing backs of his era, and that's Pádraig Mar. He was just remarkable in the year. We definitely went after him in the 2000 and which All-Ireland? It was 2011 All-Ireland. We put Eddie Brennan on him because we knew when Pádraig Mar got the ball and cleared it, it meant it was like getting a goal. The Tip crowd were on their feet. He rose the energy levels of his team. Pádraig Mar was brilliant, which is probably a lot harder to do as a back. But finally, my player of the decade then, a guy who is lighting it up still at 32 or 33 years of age. I had the pleasure of trying to mark him a lot in training. And that's TJ Reid. What he's doing with Ballyhale and what he's doing with Kilkenny, like, it's just off the charts. Christy Ring and Mick Mackey are probably heralded as the two greatest players have ever played the game. Probably Ring, probably in many people's eyes. But the next level then, the Shefflins, the Eddie Kerrs, the Jimmy Dials. I think TJ Reid is in that bracket now, and it's only as probably the years go on, we'll even really wonder again at the feats that this man has done. Why he's able to do it all, win his own ball, score, take frees, pressure situations, take penalties. He's able to hook, he's able to block. He's after transforming his body in the gym, the complete player. So my player of the decade will be TJ Reid.
Nicky, he's gone for TJ Reid.
Oh, yeah, where would you start? You know what I mean? So, because like over the decade, as you said, you're trying to, you know, the players, I suppose, have to have most longevity within the decade. I mean, where, I don't know. I mean, how many All Irelands has Tommy himself in the decade?
Did you win what, 3 Tommy this decade?
Yeah, and he'd do one.
11, 12, and 14. Yeah.
So I mean, and you have Henry Shefflin, like one of the greatest players of all time. I mean, Tommy would be one of my favourite players. Like, so I don't really know whether you can actually, I think you just, whether it's a decade or not, I suppose you're kind of drawn to who your favourite players are and the players that you most like watching. And you know, the lads that Tommy mentioned there, Joe Canning, I wouldn't have any problem with being, he's right up there for me. Patrick Horgan is right up there for me. Seamus Callanan is right up there for me. Pádraig Maher is right up there for me. Actually, a player that I used to really love, and you know, you can be just a bit unlucky with injuries. Richie Power was an amazing player.
Forced to retire at 29, which
you know,
is true.
Really. Through that decade, and you know, he was just a serious, serious player. You know, you could go on all day, but currently my favourite player is TJ Reid.
Okay,
as Tommy said, he's doing it everywhere. I mean, he's basically there in 18, he was basically having to do everything. He'd nearly have to go back, hit the puck out, win it himself. You know, he's got more support this year, and as you can see, Kilkenny has improved for that. But he's just like everything he does, is just fantastic for me.
What way would you have voted, Dai?
It was for me like it was a toss of a coin between TJ and Paddy. For me personally, I probably would have went with Paddy. Just like that, I think he's been like consistent throughout the decade. Like you look at, he's won 5 All Stars this decade, more than anyone else. He's played 49 of Tipp's championship games, finishing 46 of them. I think he's only missed 26 minutes this decade. Unbelievable, like, but look, I'm not going to argue against Tommy and Nicky. TJ Reid, pretty much our player of the decade.
Confirmed. Off the Ball's player of the decade is TJ Reid. So we'll pick TJ as our selection for the decade 2010 to 2020. It's been a remarkable 10 years of hurling, possibly the best decade ever. We'll see what the next decade has to hold. Tipperary, the team that everyone has to catch into 2020. My thanks to Dahi, to Nicky and to Tommy as well. And we'll speak to you soon. GAA on Off the Ball.